Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. It's our first in a while, but I am still Ryan Balanchy, and it's great to have you here with us for this show. You can get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com, or follow me on Twitter at Ryan Balanchy. You can follow Golf News Net every which way on your favorite social media service at the handle Golf News Net. In fact, we recommend you do that on Instagram in particular because we're running a contest with our friends at globalgolf.com, and we're giving away an outfit of their new tourney apparel, which is awesome. We have a review on the site, so check that out. Follow us on Instagram for all the details on that contest. And we are presented by BetDSI.com. We use their prices and odds each and every week for all of our PGA Tour, European Tour, LPGA Tour betting odds posts. We use it for a couple different reasons. One, primarily, that we can see how the money moves in real time and how the odds are affected based on who is putting money on which player. And even if you're in a jurisdiction where you can't legally bet online on sports, you can still use that information for your fantasy golf leagues, whether it's DFS or PGAtour.com or Yahoo, you name it. You can use BetDSI's info, and it's good stuff. And we use it every week, and we do pretty well for ourselves in DFS with a limited number of entries. So check out BetDSI.com. All right, so we haven't done this show in a little while. I've been on vacation. I hope you guys had a great Independence Day weekend, especially if you're in the United States. If you're in Canada, I hope you had a great Canada Day recently. If you're overseas, wherever you are, hopefully you are having an enjoyable summer, or if you're in the Southern Hemisphere, a reasonable winter, I guess. Anyway, so since we haven't done the show in a while, there's a lot we could kind of go into, but I did want to bring you one guest this week, and that's going to be the second part of the show. And the guest is Grant Knudsen. And Grant is basically the lead shoe designer for Cobra Puma Golf. And if you are a shoe wear aficionado, especially in golf, then you know Puma's been killing it the last really 3 or 4 years. But they have made a lot of inroads in terms of market share, in terms of design, the technology. And so I've been kind of meaning to track Grant down and talk to him about what he and his team have been able to produce, and what that is like to work with players like Ricky Fowler and Lexi Thompson and Bryson DeChambeau. So we had him on. We recorded the interview actually while I was away for Independence Day weekend, so we'll air that in the second half of this episode. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about anchoring, and I want to talk about that in the context of something Brandel Chamblee wrote about and spoke about for Golf Channel. And it's an interesting conversation, and it kind of leads down a path that's different than anchoring, maybe one we've gotten to before, but we haven't talked about it in a while. And it kind of brings this argument back up to the surface in a good way. So Brandel Chamblee, during the U.S. Senior Open, which was last weekend, Kenny Perry won for the second time. It was awesome. Great low scoring. I mean, I know that USGA purists are like, USGA events should be hard. You shouldn't be able to destroy par. Well, that's pretty much what they do with the U.S. Senior Open. That's what they've done almost every year for the last decade, is to destroy par. So you can get over that notion that the U.S. Senior Open is supposed to be hard. You win like 10 to 15 under par at the U.S. Senior Open. The U.S. Women's Open, that might be a little bit of a different story, but that's more like 7, 8 under par wins that tournament. And they're still trying to hover around par for the regular Open, even though, obviously, Brooks Koepka won at 16 under par. But if you took away the two extra strokes you got for being a par 72, and you actually got the wind you were supposed to get, you'd probably get a winning score like 4-3 under par. So keep that in mind. But nonetheless, so Chamblee, like me and probably some of you, were watching the U.S. Senior Open. And one video in particular was circulating around on Twitter and probably other parts of social media. And it is of Bernhard Langer using his long putter while he competes. And it looks, when you zoom in, a lot like he is borderline anchoring his putter. Like he's got a piece of his thumb, which is really, he's called the fulcrum point of his new stroke under the rule, since anchoring has been effectively banned. That would be the fulcrum point for his stroke. And that would mean he's not anchoring it because he's not anchoring the club to his body. So he is effectively putting his thumb to his body and then anchoring off of his thumb. So he's almost kind of creating an anchor by proxy by using his hand instead of putting the long putter against his body directly. Same thing happening with Scott McCarron, who does a similar style of putt. Well, not exactly the same, but very similar. Also kind of creating a fulcrum point against his body. And it looks bad. I mean, it just looks like they're anchoring. And the problem with the rule as written, the anchoring rule as written, is that it factors intent into it. That did you mean to anchor it, basically, is the rule. And if you didn't, then you didn't. And that doesn't work very well, because you could have, as Chambly showed, you could go up to those guys and go, hey, what's your putting stroke? And on the putting green, the practice green for a tournament, looks legit. You know, it looks like it's not anchoring. It looks like the putter is far enough away from the body part where you could anchor it that it's not. It might not be pretty, but it's not anchoring. And then you get into a tournament situation, as Chambly tweeted, and all of a sudden, that thing looks right on their body, if not directly on their body. That looks like anchoring. But you can't impugn them because they say, well, that wasn't what I was trying to do. So I'm not anchoring. And it creates this weird issue where you don't want to go after Bernard Langer, who's obviously had won the first two majors of the year and obviously didn't win three, but has as legitimate of a chance as anybody next week at the Senior Players Championship here in my backyard. It'll actually be in Vegas, but in my backyard, basically. And he's going for a fourth one of those in a row. So he's got a decent chance at three, if not four, of five senior major championships this year. And it's hard to say, hey, our best player is cheating. Well, under the rules, he's not. But it looks bad. So what do you do with that? And I think this brings up a great argument, again, for bifurcation of the rules. And I mean this with sincerity. I think pros should have different rules than amateurs. Now, I've always said the other way around. I think amateurs should have different rules from pros. And I usually mean that for equipment purposes. To say, well, pros should be able to play, or pros should be limited in the type of equipment that they can play. They should have a limited ball. They shouldn't be able to do anchoring. They shouldn't be able to do certain things. Meanwhile, amateurs should be able to do literally anything to get the ball in the hole. They could play with a shovel. They could have an 80-degree wedge. They could have a 1,000cc driver. Doesn't matter to me, you know. They could play the correcting ball, the Polaro ball, so it doesn't ever go anywhere other than straight. All that stuff. That's fine. I really don't care. As long as you enjoy the game as an amateur, I don't care how you do it, especially if it's not a tournament. But in competition, that's different. And so at the professional level, where they are always competing, there should be a different set of rules. And in this case, I believe that the Champions Tour, or PGA Tour Champions, should be able to institute a local rule on anchoring. That they should make it okay. That it's fine. You can anchor the putter. Or that you decide how long a putter can be. That there is really no minimum or maximum length for a putter, so long as it basically doesn't touch your body while you're swinging it, no one cares. You can have a 6-inch putter. You can have a 48-inch putter. Anywhere in between. It's cool, so long as you feel comfortable making putts with it. So I think that there needs to be a little bit more specificity in the maximum length of a putter. So you say, okay, Tom Pernice threw this out there, and I thought this was good. 40 inches. That's 5 inches longer than the longest standard style putter that's made. And I think that kind of takes away the long putter to an extent. So you don't worry about anchoring. You just say, okay, you have a 40-inch length you can putt with. You can bend the shaft how you need within the rules, but it's going to be pretty hard for you to anchor it because for most adult men at least, 40 inches is going to get you right about to the midpoint, you know, to your torso, basically. So that kind of takes away the option to anchor, but it gives you a better chance of, with counterbalancing weights and in the grip and then in the head, you could kind of recreate that counterbalance stroke, recreate the idea of having an anchor putter. And that would be fine. What's wrong with that? especially for pros. The guys are 50-plus. These guys have been competing forever. They have shakier hands. Older guys have shakier hands. I mean, that's just a fact. And they're not allowed to take beta blockers to slow it down. So give them something that they can work with, either by letting them anchor or making it clear what the rules are in terms of your maximum length putter. On the PGA Tour, we don't have this issue. I mean, Adam Scott got away from the anchoring deal, and it doesn't look like he... They kind of went back, and then it kind of doesn't look like he's anchoring, but now he's fine. He's got a regular putter. All the guys that used belly putters either went to the up-the-arm cooch method, which is fine. I still consider that kind of an anchoring point, but you could do that with a regular putter. You could lay it down your arm, so that's fine. That doesn't make any difference. So most of those guys have already kind of gotten away from that. So it's really a generation thing. By the time that the guys who are on the PGA Tour now turn 50, the anchoring ban will have been around long enough, and they will have dealt with it long enough. Think about Webb Simpson. I mean, he's 30, so he's got another 20 years. So if you think about that, think about that way, then you go and look at the next generation of the, or two generations from now, I guess, on PGA Tour champions, and those guys are, there's going to be no concern. The anchoring will go away. So this is kind of a stopgap measure. Gap's kind of a generous word. It really should be stop canyon measure, because it's like 10 years worth of stuff. But if you create this rule and say, okay, the older guys, it's fine. You can anchor, nobody cares. And then maybe that sets a precedent for the USGA and the RNA to say, you know, it's not so bad for the older guys to be able to anchor. Maybe we can say to amateurs, you know what, use that golf ball that spins crooked. You can use that driver that's illegal. You can take equipment beyond the play, you know, the sandbox limits that we create for you. You just can't use them in tournament competitions that we sanction or the PGA Tour sanctions. And that would be, I think people would be okay with that. And I say that having remembered what's the ERC2 that was basically the illegal driver that Arnold Palmer was promoting through Callaway, and that cost Peter Kessler his job at Golf Channel because he asked them about using an illegal driver, and it didn't go over very well. And then that's it, and that's where Peter Kessler is today, 25 years later. But the thinking here is that now that equipment has become so varied and that equipment has come so far, people are always looking for that next edge, that next opportunity to make the game a little bit easier and more enjoyable. And as a sport that is struggling to get people to find time to play because it's all the reasons we talk about, we could address that it's too hard by making equipment better performing and say, okay, well, you can play with kind of the easy stuff, and you can have a better time. Why not? What's wrong with that? More people out there, doesn't matter what the person in front of you shot. As long as you take the $5 Nassau from the guy that you're playing with the rules that you agree to, you're fine. It's good. And that can be reasonably accomplished, I think. So I'm not usually someone who pays attention to what Brandel Chamblee has to say, but I thought he raised a good point, and he wrote an interesting piece, a well-researched piece, and I think that that's what we should do moving forward, is try bifurcation with the 50-plus crowd. Just try it. Doesn't hurt anything. Play 54-hole events with no cut, and people just want to see the old guys play and have fun, make birdies. Let's try it. Just like they're trying on PGA Tour Canada and Latino America and the Web.com Tour with distance measuring devices, whether you're going to let them use laser range finders, I think it's going to go through and it'll be fine, and you'll let guys use them, and that'll be good. That'll not necessarily improve pace of play, but it could shave a little bit of time off of each round, each shot. It could be good. Let's try it. There's no reason not to experiment. So I have to hope that the PGA Tour maybe heard a little bit of what Brandel had to say and said, well, why don't we try it for 3 or 4 events and see where it goes? And we'll go from there. I think it would be interesting to see. All right, so that's the anchoring debate in a little bit of a nutshell. Let's move from putters to shoes. Grant Knudsen is the team lead for shoe development, shoe design at Cobra Puma Golf. And you may not have heard his name before, but you should know what he's accomplishing between the Titan Tour shoe, the Ignite Foam, their new disc, which is kind of a take on BOA, the BOA closure system, which I love. I haven't had a chance to use disc, but in the same vein and same custom fit idea. He's pumping out these great ideas for technology while also creating innovative looking design. The Ignite Sport, the sports shoe that Bryson DeChambeau is wearing. I have a pair. They're as comfortable as slippers. I love those. They're laced up, more traditional looking shoes. They look fresh and perform great. If you care about having modern, basically sneaker designs on your shoes, they've got those too. So I wanted to talk to Grant about what he's accomplished, how he works, how his team works, how they work with each other, how they work with their staffers, what they do to kind of put technology in shoes, how they make all that work. So we'll run that conversation and we'll come back at the end.
Grant, thanks for being on the show. I am a not-so-closeted fan of yours for a number of years now. You guys have been killing it at Cobra Puma Golf on the footwear side, starting with Titan Tour into the Ignite Foam. Now you guys have brought the custom fit technology with disc into play. Can you walk us through what your team looks like and how you guys have worked together over the last several years to really bring Puma shoe game forward?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a great team here in Carlsbad, California. I've been with the company for about 5 years now, and we have a great senior designer named Jason Rowley, a senior developer, Keith Sedgwick, and a great PLM, and a young guy named Andrew Boston. That's our crew that makes all the footwear happen. It's been quite the ride over the last couple of years. We've had some great growth with the launch of the Titan Tour franchise, bringing in that new Ignite Foam cushioning technology, as you mentioned, as well as this brand new proprietary disc technology that launched in 2017. So we're really seeing golf footwear progress. We're at the forefront of leading the trends and the technologies, whether it's style or performance. And at the end of the day, we're making shoes that fit well for everyone, whether you're a weekend warrior or you're playing out on tour like Ricky Fowler or Bryson DeChambeau.
It feels like footwear technology, especially in golf, has come a long way very quickly. That golf shoes didn't change a whole lot for a very long time. Then they started to change kind of into the world of soft spikes. And then you got more advanced materials in kind of the upper and the sole. And then all of a sudden, just bang, 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 like three or four huge technologies kind of come out in a row that have kind of become ubiquitous in a sense. Is that how it feels on your end, that all of a sudden the shoe that we wore 10 years ago to play golf is pathetically obsolete compared to what's out today?
Yeah, I think if anyone has some of those old shoes in their closet from 10 plus years ago, they look like dinosaurs. I mean, you do not want to be playing in those due to comfort and just a lack of technology as well as the style. I mean, it's come so far in such a relatively short amount of time. And that is primarily due to new technology, innovation, new materials, and the progressive nature of the footwear industry in general, and golf is able to draft off of that. So we really use innovation as our fuel to make our new footwear line each year, and whether it's mixing progressive mesh materials with old pull-up leathers and making it look modern, or using TPU outsoles that are super thin, very lightweight, yet still very stable. We're able to make shoes perform like those old 10-year-old shoes, but look and feel very modern and progressive. So you're really getting the best of both worlds, plus things like disc technology where it's making laces a thing of the past if you're not into tying your shoes. I mean, a couple twists and you're ready to go, where that was not possible back in the day.
The disc style technology really captures my attention because, like you said, and it's not that I'm lazy and don't want to tie my shoes, but the ability to change your fit so easily over the course of a round is really compelling because at different points in a round, your shoes get loose, you get a little loose, things change. and you need to have that right fit on every single shot. How has that implementation been of bringing disc into the footwear line as opposed to having classic laces, and what has that design process been like to kind of lead the replacement of laces out and bring in disc?
It's been an extremely fun yet challenging project. So disc has been in Puma footwear actually since the early 90s. It was in some track spikes, some other performance footwear. Then it went more the way of lifestyle footwear, kind of a fashion accessory. And we really wanted to bring it back into the performance forefront. So we had some really interesting designs. And what actually came to market is the Titan Tour Ignite Premium with disc. There's an Ignite Spikeless disc, and then also the Titan Tour Ignite disc, which is our main tour shoe. So these really ended up being phenomenal shoes for the golfer because, as you mentioned, whether it's every shot, if you want to dial in, adjust, you can do that. If you're in a cart taking a break, you can loosen them up, let your feet breathe a little bit at the turn, you know, loosen them up. So giving you all kinds of options for performance on the course, as well as just versatility for taking them on and off. Like, let's say you're late for a round, showing up. Hey, you got to put your shoes in the parking lot. It probably saves you a couple minutes there. So where you may have been late in the past, you're on time with disc. So there's the performance feature. There's also the versatility feature.
Speaking with your staffers and the men and women who play in these shoes for big money each and every week, what are their demands like? What are their needs like? And how do they vary compared to amateurs like me who may have similar set of demands but maybe kind of fit differently on the bell curve of what we want?
Whenever we meet with our tour players, and we meet with them often, they're at another level in a lot of ways. They look at things differently. They view products differently. Footwear, we look at it as equipment, similar to the clubs. So you know how important a club is in a player's hand. Oftentimes, footwear is viewed the same way because the game starts from the ground up. So you really need to be confident with the fit, the feel, the stability, and the performance of your footwear. So whether it's the cleats or the outsole or the way that the disc tightens around their foot, it really has to be a perfect custom fit. And that's what our footwear allows for. So we're really providing amazing comfort, amazing fit, and industry-leading style as well. So it's bringing all those things together for the best players in the world, and they are able to go out and perform every week on tour. It's a little different from you or I. I think we show up at the, you know, at a local shop, you know, your green grass shop, or at a local store, and you throw on a couple pairs, you find the one that fits, that looks decent, and you're good to go. So they're on a totally different level. Not to say that you're not there, Ryan, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. These guys are at a very, very high level in all aspects of the game of golf.
They're also walking in the fairway probably a whole lot more often than I am, so I could probably wear a pair of boots and not necessarily have to worry about it too much as compared to them.
They do typically, we can make them probably a fairway shoe would work for the pros, not so much for the everyday amateur.
I think I've noticed this, it kind of across the board in footwear, but you guys are certainly at the forefront of this in golf, that there's been a better emphasis in the last few years on footwear for women and kids, and that for years and years and years, shoe companies have just kind of put out the footwear because they had to for both kind of segments. And now that women are becoming a more important part of the sport as they should be, and kids are starting to get appealed to because they have so much potential to play the sport way earlier in life, it seems like shoe companies are making that extra effort to say, hey, you guys deserve just as much performance as the average man who shows up to a golf course and plays probably more golf, but you know, deserves the same amount of comfort as everybody else. Has that been true on your guys then? Has that been a point of emphasis to get the same kind of performance into all of your footwear?
Absolutely. We as a brand, Puma, have a large initiative going, and it's called The Future is Female, and we really believe that. So in the past, we would look at a women's shoe. This is going back, you know, 5-6 years, and pink it and shrink it. That means make it pink, make the men's version pink, make it smaller, you're good to go. And, you know, we don't do that anymore. We're making women-specific footwear. There's a lot of great ambassadors out there for the women's game that we have on our staff, the most notable being Lexi Thompson, who has the demands of actually the level of performance of men's footwear. I mean, she swings as hard as probably any male amateur. So, I mean, there are so many amazing things that we're doing in our line for the ladies footwear. The other being the disc technology, the Ignite foam. We're taking anything. We look at it all as one line. I mean, we're doing the same things across the board, and it's been a pleasure to be able to create footwear for both men, ladies, and kids that everyone seems to be enjoying, liking. Our business is growing, and getting Puma out there with fun colors, stylish, and it's really something that's unique to us, and we do a really great job with our ladies' line.
Yeah, you guys' shoes pop, and they evolve. They're not always the same kind of pop. They got a different style each and every time you go through those iterations. What are your inspirations? How do you guys draw on those inspirations to build the look that keeps it current and keeps it ahead of your competition so that when someone sees a piece of Puma footwear, they know it's Puma footwear?
We have a very specific brand DNA. So we have a few design principles that we look at each year. And so we're always trying to push the limits. You know, we want to make our footwear fast. We want to make it powerful. Definitely has to be relevant. So we are doing things like that to make sure that when you see a shoe, whether it has a form stripe, which is our branding, or a Puma cat on it, you know it's ours. It should stand out from the crowd and really make you feel better and more confident when you're wearing it. Because at the end of the day, if you look better, you're going to feel better and you're going to play better. And looking forward into seasons, you know, in product, we're working on our 2019 footwear right now. And then, you know, it's mid-2017. So we're way in advance. And we look at things like cars, architecture, trends from other categories, looking at, you know, New York Fashion Show. We look at all kinds of things and really bundle it up, make it work for Puma, and pick a direction. And we know that we're going to be leading. We want to take risks, move forward. And you've seen that, I think, the last couple of years with many of our styles, whether it's the Tight Tour, the Ignite Spikeless Sport, or even the High Top that Ricky debuted in Hawaii last year.
Yeah. The Spikeless Sport, from personal experience, is my favorite golf shoe in the world. It's like a golf slipper, and it just feels incredibly comfortable. I mean, the most comfortable golf shoe I've ever worn, and it's remarkable. And what you guys are doing in terms of the innovation and looks, it seems like it helps to have personalities like Bryson, like Ricky, like Lexi, that are willing to take that step forward ahead of their peers and say, yes, this looks a little different, but this works for me and this works for my personality. So how is it working with them in terms of not just performance, but making sure it fits their personality when they put it on and it matches who they are when they play golf?
It's a really fun process to work with all of our athletes. You know, Cobra Puma Golf doesn't have the most athletes on tour. I don't know if we ever will, but we have the right athletes, the ones that fit our brand, the ones that fit our culture. So if we're meeting with Ricky, he embodies the game of golf. He's a great guy, likes to show off his fashion sense, likes to do things a little bit differently. So whenever we're making footwear with him, we take that into account and make sure that we're offering products that fit both the way you play and your personality. Same with Bryson. He's more of a spikeless guy. He goes back and forth between spikeless and wearing some disc shoes. We put a lot of work into his hat, for example. It's not a footwear thing, but we also work on headwear and really doing things unique to each player. And then when it comes to Lexi, I mean, she's just such a great ambassador for the ladies game and the game in general. And we really want her to express her personality. So whether it's her glove, her visor, her outfits, or her footwear, we're making sure that she feels comfortable with all that color out there on the course. So when she's out there winning, she's also looking good and feeling good.
The athletes don't want to compromise, and obviously you guys want to pack as much technology as you can to every shoe. But you're talking about shoes that are 18 months in advance of release for what you're working on right now. Do you guys have to make compromises on what you bring to each individual shoe, and how do you kind of decide what makes the cut in terms of technology that you keep and technology that you bring in that's net new to each year's worth or season's worth even of shoes?
Well, each year we obviously learn from the prior year, you know, what worked, what didn't. Typically things have been working lately, which makes our jobs a lot easier. You know, it's easy to move forward when you have a couple past wins. So that's how we've been lately. We've introduced a few technologies that we believe in. At the end of the day, comfort is a huge piece of the game, followed by performance. So if you're comfortable out there and feeling good, you're going to be able to perform better. Traction and stability, we've got cleat systems that are industry leading, and our cushioning with the Ignite foam allows for responsive comfort. The disc technology allows for industry leading fitting. So whatever it is, we do not compromise, because especially on our tour footwear, because you can't. If you do that, you're letting down the tour player. You're also letting down the consumer that's looking for the best product out there. So we really have been able to mix and match technologies in each different specific shoe for the person buying them or the person on tour playing them to make sure that they're not compromising and they're getting the best product possible.
It seems like obviously more – we get with technology, the more custom fit and the more custom feel you can have with between Ignite and Disc and other things that are forthcoming. And I think some golfers, especially if you're a tech geek, think about how can you integrate technology to create more custom fit and to create more of an awareness of what your feet are doing in your shoes as you play golf. Is that integration not too far off, or is there some apprehension that maybe consumers aren't ready for that or aren't as interested in that as maybe some of the people are?
Well, I think each and every day the consumer and the golfer is getting a lot more educated. A lot of that is because of social media, the internet. You know, it's not like you just walk into a golf shop and see five shoes and have to pick from those five. There's choice now. So you really have to make sure that your technologies and everything you are creating makes sense for what each unique consumer wants. I mean, there's a lot of different people out there, and that means there's a lot of different feet out there. So, you know, there's wides, there's mediums, there's people with bumps and bruises and a lifetime of wear and tear on their feet, you know. So we feel that making these technologies, like especially like Ignite foam, for example, which is just super comfortable. It's a responsive PU foam that has a great energy return. It doesn't break down over time. It stays the same, at the same level of comfort, no matter the temperature. So doing things like that gives more people the opportunity to be comfortable in our footwear. Whereas in the past, you know, it's hard to have a one-size-fits-all shoe. But with everything we're doing and everything we're putting into our footwear, we're able to fit more people in a really, really positive way.
Can you give people, just in kind of a broad sense, what it's like to come to work every day and work with your team, work on development, research, and put it all together into an integrated product? What that's like to work on golf footwear, something you love putting together on a day-to-day basis?
It's definitely an exciting and interesting job every single day. I mean, you really never know what you're going to get when you come to the office. We obviously have planned timelines, planned schedules, but depending on how things are going or what's happening on tour, what's happening maybe at the factory or downstairs in our fit and wear department, I mean, it's kind of a really great example of how organized chaos can be very, very fun and exciting every day. So we have a great team. We're really close-knit. We're here in Carlsbad, California, so we get to go out and test the product as well pretty much 12 months out of the year. So that's a huge piece of it. Living and breathing the golf world and golf community is something we truly believe in as well as just active lifestyle. So it's a really fun place to work, especially on the footwear side of things, where we get to push the limits of style and design and technology each and every year. And also showcase our products on tour. You know, you have a lot of people, a lot of eyes on these guys every single week. And that's something that we also take pride in. You know, what we're working on now, it might be in a couple of years, but that's going to end up on the best players in the world, viewed by everyone in the world. And that's something that my team and I especially really take pride in. So they do a great job, and I should probably give them most of the credit. They do all the work, and I just kind of help guide it in the right direction.
That's very modest. You guys are doing some killer stuff, and I appreciate you taking a little time out, especially before the 4th of July, to talk about it with me and come on our show. And we're excited to see what comes next out of your brain, since it's already in 2019 and we're still living in 2017.
So, well, yeah, I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to it. We still got a lot of exciting things to come this year, and it's going to be an exciting time for golf, and we're really excited about what's to come.
Thanks to Grant Knutson for being on the show again, making time for us over the Independence Day weekend. A little tough to get together, but we made it work, and I appreciate him being flexible in coming on the show with us and talking about his passion, what he does each and every day with Cobra Puma Golf. Okay, next week on the show, we have results from Greenbrier. We have John Deere to think about, the final spots in the Open Championship getting reserved. We'll have the Senior Players Championship. I'll be in Vegas. So we've got a lot of things to talk about. But in the meantime, be sure to give us a follow on Twitter, at Golf News Net, or at Ryan Ballingy. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat, as well at Golf News Net. And make sure to give us a 5-star review if you listen to us on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It helps us reach more people. Just head over to our page. When you go over to podcast, search the 19th Hole Golf Show, give us 5 stars, and we will love you forever for that. And if you have a Roku box, subscribe to our channel, Golf News Net. Is the name of the channel. We have more than 6,000 subscribers right now who take in our videos and can watch it on their TV, which is super cool. We love having that. So give us a follow or download, or whatever you call that, on Roku if you have a chance. All right. Until next time, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks for listening. Great to be back in the podcast recording seat, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.